The Bills dominate the Finns on a Thursday night football game where Bills went heavy on the run and went shut down on defense. And unfortunately, Tua gets concussed again and an outlook on what could be the rest of his career. Along with that, it's Friday, NFL Week 2 preview coming up next. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You are listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Chris Kostich. Along with me, Adam Wright. And we're just going to get right into it because this is the biggest story already, biggest talking point already here on this Friday afternoon. Recording currently at 11:21 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Bills get the win against the Dolphins 31-10 in dominating fashion in a game that Josh Allen really didn't need to do much. 13 for 19, 139 yards and a touchdown. He didn't even run the ball. James Cook taking over, 11 carries, 78 yards, two touchdowns. Defense also got themselves three interceptions, Jamarcus Ingram having two of them, along with a pick six. And the biggest story of the night, Tua getting concussed for I'm going to call it a second time, because the first time around for whatever it was, and then he gets concussed for some reason, ends up playing the next week against Cincy and gets even worse. And I guess this is where the conversation starts of the outlook for the rest of his career. There are bigger things than football. And we're kind of at that point where Tua is now, we've seen him have three really scary hits. The first one, he's walking away, jogging up the field, and then starts collapsing. So, you know, that's a concussion right there. And then the next week, goes to Cincinnati, bangs his head on the turf, completely knocked out in a game that he should not have been playing in to begin with. And now last night, lowering his shoulder into, oddly enough, Damar Hamlin, and gets concussed again. Adam, we'll start with you on your thoughts. What are we thinking here? I mean, it's the road for Tua is kind of coming up at this point.
I think what should happen is very different than what will happen. I definitely agree with a lot of people in saying that he should probably hang it up at this point. The kid has faced so many different concussions. The only reason I have any hope that he's going to live a decent life after football is Wes Welker. If you remember Wes Welker, towards the end of his career, he was facing concussion after concussion, and we just thought his brain was going to be mush. He actually went on to become one of the better coaching minds, up-and-coming coaching minds. I know he doesn't have a coordinator job yet. He should. One of the better coaching minds,
too, by the way, on the Dolphins.
On the Dolphins, it's a subplot. Come on, yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's a good connection. But this is kind of one of what to my point. This is something where I don't believe what should happen will happen. I think with Tua having just signed that massive deal and having him still having a pretty strong passion for the game, I don't think he's going to give up. I think he's going to come back at some point this season when he probably shouldn't. And I hope he doesn't face and have another concussion, but I also hope he takes multiple weeks from this. I know with concussions, you take usually just 1 week. He should take multiple. And if he comes back, he needs to take better care of his body. And I'm referring to the play last night, how it even happened. You know, you need to slide, and you need to think about how you take these hits. And you think you need to sort of protect your body. Because when you run out of the pocket and then you dive for the first down, a late dive when you see there are a couple defenders heading over towards you. I mean, that's an irresponsible hit for you to be taking. You have a family to take care of. This is a guy who you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. Football is secondary in all of this. I know there's a lot of football fans who are just selfishly just want their football and want the quality of the game to be sustained. That's fine. I get it. I get that part. There needs to be a balance. You need to also be able to take care of yourself, which means make sure you're sliding. Don't make late slides as you can see the defender about to dive into your face. Because that was probably a preventable injury. If you look at that play, he just dove when he saw that Damar Hamlin was right there about to hit you. You dove right into him. I want this kid to be safe. So I think that was he needs to train himself to take better care of his body. The first couple of years ago, those were all concussions that were suffered because the offensive line was not that good. The offensive line's gotten a little better, but you still need to gear yourself to take these hits a little better. That's all I'm saying.
No, I completely agree. And they said it immediately right after the injury on the broadcast too, that Tua has been known to be more of a reckless quarterback and not knowing when to slide or when not to slide in that matter, I guess. This was a matter to slide. I mean, it's a 31-10 game. You're still battling back from down three scores. It's the fourth quarter. The chances of you coming, the momentum is nowhere near on your side. And I get that you're trying to fight. I respect that. But when you know you have these concussion issues, you should be looking to protect yourself at all costs. Look at Tyler Lockett. Not a quarterback, but he took so many hits, terrible hits over the middle of the field that took him out of games where he just drops. He just holds A, Madden style, and goes for the possession catch every single time. He doesn't try to risk it. And I'm not looking at the stats, but if I were to guess, probably has the lowest number of yak yards in the league because of it. And it's because he doesn't want to take another terrible hit. I said this, I also texted this in our group chat this morning. If you want to call it a hot take, it's a hot take. I don't know, but I feel like the Dolphins are very, very responsible for the way Tua is right now, though. I mean, if he doesn't play in that Cincinnati game, we're having a very different conversation right now.
Well, it just happened so long ago. So I don't think those concussions really have much to do with this one here. And I'm sure it piles up and makes it worse. But like it's this concussion specifically was more on Tua than the rest of the Dolphins team. He needs to be more responsible about how he takes hits and when to slide. You can't be making late slides and you can't be diving into defenders for a first down, especially with the concussion history that you have. I mean, this is how a lot of quarterbacks get hurt.
No, but what I'm saying is that he should have never been playing in that Cincinnati game to begin with. He got hurt on Sunday, he gets the concussion on Sunday, somehow, for whatever reason, is cleared for Thursday by, I don't even know how. Like, for some reason, the NFL concussion protocol just got thrown right out the window. And he's throwing up gang signs when he gets knocked out. I just don't know. I just don't get how you can throw a guy out there 4 days later on a short week as well after getting the concussion. Everyone and their mother saw the way Tua was running and falling on that Sunday afternoon. And it was like a week 2, week 1 game that it happened, and then goes to play against Cincinnati, whacks his head, and now he's out for a month.
I mean, this Dolphins team, the organization in general there's been a lot of things that behind the scenes have just looked a little sketchy. Didn't they have to surrender a first round pick for tampering on a player who was in Tom Brady, who was still under team control with the Buccaneers?
Might have. Well, on top of that, you also had that whole thing with Brian Flores too.
I think that might have been it. But there was also the issue with Tom Brady. I mean, like,
that one's not coming to
the only mind. Reason I don't put that all on the Dolphins is because, I mean, Tua has the free will to say, I don't think I should play at the same time. He may not, maybe he underestimated how he was feeling, but if he was not cleared by doctors and they told him you can go too, he could easily have said, I don't feel safe doing this.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, the Dolphins definitely deserve blame for that issue. In fact, most of it. I'm just saying, maybe we shouldn't rule out that Tua again didn't make the best of decisions.
No,
situation.
I definitely would agree that he did not make a great decision in that situation. I'm just saying that culminating up to this point, last year he was able to stay pretty injury free. But that's just the situation that's on hand. And then back to your point about him getting the huge contract now, right? I think that would be more of a incentive for him to not play anymore at this point. You already got the bag and getting this guaranteed money. You're set. You're basically set. You're set for the rest of your life. Go hang out with your kids. Enjoy being a father. You got your kids' college tuition right there.
Literally.
Go be the quarterback coach for the Dolphins.
But imagine, just think about that through the Dolphins' perspective. They just paid this guy big money to be their franchise quarterback. He was their fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
And then just a couple of years into him being on the team in general. And on top of that, you also have, you just gave him a massive deal before the season started. Oh, that would be such an L for the Dolphins.
It would.
And it's not just a shitty situation for them. Pardon my language, because they treated this quarterback this way. Like you played a massive hand in having him play right after being concussed, and you didn't invest much in the offensive line. That's also on you. And then you're turning around, you give him this massive deal and you let him get hurt again. Like there has to be some, I place a little bit of blame on Tua for his decision making, but I also place most of it on the organization.
Yep. Yeah. I guess at this point we'll kind of just take a little outlook to the schedule for the Dolphins the rest of the way. So they have the Seahawks next week in Seattle. Then they have the Titans on Monday Night Football. Then they're in New England for a game against the Pats. Got the bye. So basically we're basically going to assume that he is done for the next month. And the game that he comes back for is against Indianapolis, pretty good defense. So, and Skylar Thompson, Mike McDaniel already came out and said Skylar Thompson's going to be their guy. They're going to add another quarterback for depth. They also have Tim Hodge. I could be butchering that. Or Tim Boyle, excuse me. Tim Boyle, who was backup quarterback for the Jets last year, got in for a game or two. Please fact check me on that, though. Currently on the Dolphins practice squad, so imagine that he's going to be in as an emergency quarterback or at least QB2, depending on who the Dolphins end up signing for this QB depth. But they're going to be reeling for this next month, that's for sure, up until that bye week.
Yeah, and the quarterback situation is interesting because while I like Skylar Thompson, Skylar Thompson does not deserve to be a backup. He should be a third string somewhere.
Yeah.
So I still think that if they still want to stay in contention and sort of buy time for Tua to come back, you're not winning games with Skylar Thompson. He's a guy who's not going to turn the ball over, but he's also not going to get the ball to your playmakers. He has one career touchdown pass in seven games played. He's played over 200 snaps in his career.
Yeah.
One touchdown pass. He's not a guy who's going to get the ball to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So I think you need to pull a trade for somebody out there I can name off the top of my head. I don't know how much the Jaguars want to hold on to Mac Jones.
Mm.
But there's a possibility. You have a guy. This would be a mutual thing. The Dolphins want to stay in contention. They still want to be competitive this year. Mac Jones wants to prove himself, and he's not doing it with Trevor Lawrence blocking his way to a starting gig.
Maybe another one they could throw out there. Maybe you trade for Joe Flacco. Maybe you
he's
trade
a free
for Joe
agent,
Flacco.
I believe.
Oh, is he? No, so I thought he was on the Colts.
Is he on the Colts? Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But Anthony Richardson. Yeah.
Anthony Richardson has his own
potential either way.
Injury troubles that are.
Either common. Way. They're not winning games with Skylar Thompson.
No.
So they need something else. I like him as a third string, an emergency guy who you throw in if your backup gets hurt. But if he's your backup, then it's a bad situation.
Yeah. So we'll step aside for that one now that we've gotten the somber part of this Friday out of the way. Coming up next, week 2 preview. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast, powered by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, Adam Wright. It's time for the week 2 NFL preview. So, first game on the docket. The funny thing for me is that I usually just go through the schedule based off of ESPN, and because I have the Patriots set as the favorite, they always end up being at the top of the list for the week. For the 1 o'clock games.
Me too.
Yeah. So we're just going to go right into it. Seahawks, Patriots. Patriots coming off a big win last week against Cincy. Defense really showed up. And the run game for the Patriots was all, well, Ramondre Stevenson was the reason why the run game even worked. The Patriots offensive line was one of the bottom 5 lowest graded offensive lines out of week 1 per pro football or PFF pro football focus. And seeing the way that the Seahawks played against the Broncos just completely stifled their run game. I don't know if this is going to be as good of a game on the ground for Ramondre. And this is probably going to be a game where you're really going to have to rely on Jacoby Brissett to get the ball out to guys like Jalen Polk and whatnot. So this could be – I'm going Seahawks, especially with the fact that the Seahawks have a very good ground game and much better, in my opinion, a lot better than what the Seahawks have, especially with Kenneth Walker as your bell cow. So – and Zach Charbonneau as well to back him up. So I'm going Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Seahawks on this one. I think we're going to see the Patriots win a lot more games than we think, than most people think they are. Mainly because, yes, a lot of the team is back. It's all returners from the 4-win team. But the big difference is quarterback. It's not that Jacoby Brissett is a good quarterback, but it's the fact that Bailey Zappe and Mac Jones threw a lot of interceptions. Just by not turning the ball over, you'll win a lot more games that last year you lost, you'd win this year because you're not your quarterback who's under center isn't turning the ball over. That's what Brissett is good at, is not turning the ball over. That being said, I still have the Seahawks this week. I think this isn't going to be This Seahawks team has their stuff together a lot better than the Bengals do right now. There's something seriously wrong with that Bengals team. I didn't think that this would cause this much of a distraction, all the contract issues. Joe Burrow doesn't look right. We don't have those issues with this Seahawks team. They're healthy. There's no contract issues right now. I think this Seahawks team is much more level-headed, and therefore we're going to see a more predictable result here. The Patriots may make it a game, but still give me the Seahawks.
I think that the Patriots will be able to make this a game. Spread is actually Seahawks by 3.5 with this game being in Foxborough. And now that Tua is out, the AFC East kind of has opened up slightly a little bit, right? I mean, the Patriots still have, after this week, they still have a really tough stretch coming up. They're in New York against the Jets for a Thursday night game next week. So they'll have a short week, and then they'll go, or same as the Jets, but regardless. Then they go to San Francisco for a game against the Niners, and then home against the Dolphins. So that's their kind of chance to kind of piggyback over or give themselves, leapfrog themselves over the Dolphins at that point. And then they have the Texans and the Jaguars across the pond in London. It's going to be a very tough stretch coming up. I mean, there are not a lot of very easy games for the Patriots coming up. That is for certain.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be a good team, but they'll win a couple of games that they would have lost last year. That's all I'm saying.
Saints and Cowboys in Dallas. So Dallas coming off of a very dominating win, or both teams coming off of very dominating wins. Saints over the Panthers, Cowboys over the Browns. And here's one takeaway here is that Derek Carr did not see a lot of pressure in that game against the Panthers. And when it comes to quarterbacks and face and being under pressure and their QBR, in that sense, the QBR for Derek Carr is compared to a clean pocket to not having a clean pocket is night and day. About a 120 QBR when the pocket is clean, around a 75 when the pocket isn't clean. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of quarterbacks are like that, and there are a few exceptions. Joe Burrow's QBR is kind of higher when he's facing pressure. Tom Brady, obviously. And you know the Cowboys are going to be sending pressure, and honestly, a lot of times, all they need to do is send four, and they'll have and they're just going to have Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence on the bookends, just pounding it in there. Right.
Pause.
Oh, I'm going to go Cowboys on this one. I just don't see Derek Carr really having the same game that he had against the Panthers.
You really don't have to bring up Derek Carr or the Saints offensive line to tell me that the Cowboys are winning. The Cowboys are just head and shoulders a better team.
Oh, yeah.
Dak Prescott's a better quarterback than Derek Carr. They have more offensive firepower. They have a better defense. Just all around, this Cowboys team is better. And they're going to, again, this is, like I said last week, this Cowboys team is a very, this generation's Cowboys are very good early in the season. They're going to go 2-0, 3-0, maybe even 4-0. You're going to get some Super Bowl aspirations. Could this be the year? Could this be it? And then you're going to see those same old Cowboys again mid-season. They finish 12. They'll finish 12-5, and then they'll lose in the divisional round again. This is what they do. They're good early in the season, and they give you lots of promise.
Yeah. Next game on the docket: Bucks and Lions in Detroit. And back-to-back weeks where the Lions have a NFC playoff rematch, this one of the divisional game from last year against the Buccaneers, where the Lions ended up winning by a score. And the spread on this one is pretty interesting. Lions by 7.5. I'm going to say that the Bucs cover, and I'm going to double down. Bucs are going to get their revenge, piggyback off of the 4-touchdown game that Baker Mayfield had against Washington. Granted, he's going to be playing a much better defense than what Washington has to offer. But I'm thinking that there's a lot of momentum with Tampa right now. Baker's feeling good. I think that they're going to ride this momentum. And week two is a very trap week type of week. And I think the Lions are going to fall into this trap at home.
This is a game where you can make a strong argument that the Buccaneers will win. But if you're, if the argument is that because the game in the division round was a one score game, that doesn't necessarily mean that this one will be too. Because I wouldn't let the score fool you, because up until the last 4 minutes of the game, it was a two score game. It was 31-17. And the Lions had the upper hand. They had control of that game the entire way through. I still have the Lions winning this one. The Buccaneers will probably make it interesting, but I still think the Lions are head and shoulders a better team. And the Buccaneers in week one, they took advantage of what was a very bad defense for the Commanders. I mean, they didn't do much to fix that defense for them. They did a lot on offense. They didn't do much on defense. So, yeah, I mean, this Buccaneers team will probably be a playoff contender. But I would pump the brakes just a little bit. Give me the Lions on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot to kind of mention this. I'm feeling kind of more of a shootout type of game for this one. Maybe both teams get into the 30s.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I think that I don't know what it is. I'm just feeling like that's kind of the direction of this game right now. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah.
Next game on the docket, Colts and Packers in Lambeau. One of the first few games that the Packers are going to have to go without Jordan Love. Malik Willis is going to be their starter. Right off the bat, I'm going Colts. But it's really the big thing with Anthony Richardson is he's really got to hone down on his accuracy. He's got some accuracy problems. Granted, he did have a pretty solid day last week against the Texans, but he threw under 50% completion percentage. His accuracy needs a lot of work. And this is a big talking point with Anthony Richardson in general. This is a project that you're willing to work on because of the arm talent in general. And you could see it last week with some of the wild throws he was making. But only 9 completions on 19 passes. Obviously, that's not really the Colts' end game is the pass game. But if you're going to throw 19 passes, you kind of hope that your quarterback's going to complete at least 11 of those, not less than 10 or just less than double digits in general. On the Packers side, Malik Willis in his 3 starts with the Titans didn't go over 100 yards. So, I mean, the run game for the Packers is going to do pretty well. I mean, Josh Jacobs showed he's not washed up, but speaks for itself. Give me the Colts.
Yeah, just because Malik Willis is out, the Colts are winning this game. I mean, like, Anthony Richardson may have only thrown the ball 19 times last week, but he's not going to throw any more than that this week. I think the Colts go out ahead early, and they kind of coast. They hand the ball off a lot more to Jonathan Taylor in order to run the clock out. And it's not a shootout here. We're not expecting a shootout at all. Malik Willis can't throw the ball. So this is a pretty easy pick. Give me the Colts by a comfortable margin.
Yeah. Easy, easy. And this is probably going to be another easy one. Niners-Vikings. Right off the bat, I'm going to go Niners. They know Sam Darnold, and I'm thinking this is probably going to be a boogeyman game.
Very much so. This isn't hard. I think we're going to see numbers-wise the best Sam Darnold of his career just because they're surrounded by more weapons than ISIS. However, they're not going to win any games, at least not enough. So, yeah. And don't let this past week fool you, because they played the Giants, a Giants that literally nothing about that team except kind of their pass rush is interesting. And I guess Malik Nabers. There's nothing good about that team where you feel that you can actually fear this Giants team. There's nothing.
Yeah. On top of that, too, other big story in terms of the Niners, Christian McCaffrey still listed as questionable with an Achilles injury. Excuse me. John Lynch, the Niners GM, said this morning he doesn't know if McCaffrey will play. And the Niners are already under some turmoil with the comments that Jordan Mason had made before or after whatever the Niners Monday night game, excuse me, where he said that he knew he was starting on Friday night. Kyle Shanahan went and said, that's not true. I mean, if you were talking about straight up reps, Jordan Mason probably had an idea that he might be getting the start on Friday night. And it didn't mean that McCaffrey wasn't going to play. Maybe he was going to get limited reps. I don't know. But Niners might be seeing some sort of turmoil from that. But regardless, Jordan Mason showed that he's a very good running back, especially against that Jets defense last week. Speaking of the Jets versus Titans, in Nashville, Jets with back-to-back away games, both teams looking to get bounce back victories. I'm going to go with the Jets on this one. And here's the thing. Will Levis did not have a good game last week. Really, they didn't score a touchdown last week either. Will Levis, 127 yards, one touchdown, they did score a touchdown, one touchdown, two interceptions. But it was really their defense that they're kind of riding their coattails on. And I just don't see that happening again this week. I'm seeing the Jets, if they can figure it out, they can figure it out on offense. Great on defense, too. They need to figure it out on defense. But I think that they're going to have a much better time defensively this week. And that's if we get away from all the bullshit, benching Sauce Gardner, Nathaniel Hackett can't get his head out of his ass on offense. There is a lot of very underlying things that the Jets need to do to actually win this game. But the consensus should be that the Jets are going to win.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, I thought, looked fine. The stats aren't going to show it, but I thought Rodgers looked fine. When they were throwing, I thought their passing game was pretty good. They didn't have that much trouble against the 49ers secondary. It was their front seven they were having trouble with, which, like, again, Albert Einstein once said, the definition of insanity is continuously doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. They kept on hammering the run game with Breece Hall. As great of a running back as Breece Hall is, that front seven had Breece Hall figured out. So why didn't you throw it to Garrett Wilson? Why didn't you throw it to Mike Williams? You had clean pockets. That Jets offensive line was fine. But when you have Aaron Rodgers back there and you have two really good targets, you have Alan Lazard on top of that, that's football malpractice. The fact that you were playing from behind and you only had Aaron Rodgers throwing 21 times. That is an atrocity. You cannot be doing that when you're playing from behind. You're throwing the ball. You are not handing the ball off. Breece Hall had 16 carries. When you're playing down by that much, you are not running the ball that many times. So, yeah, give me the Jets. I can't see what happened on Monday Night Football happening again. If it continues throughout the next few games, I want somebody in that Jets coaching staff fired, whether it be on defense, on offense, whoever was responsible for Monday Night Football or continues to be the next few weeks, get them the hell out of New York.
Yeah. One more thing I kind of want to throw in there as well. Does Hassan Reddick not like getting paid? Does he love losing money? Because
you can't blame Hassan Reddick. You got to blame the Jets for this one. You traded for a player with contract issues. You traded for a player with contract issues, and then you continued those issues that the Eagles had, and you expected for him to play for you when he wouldn't play for the Eagles.
But at the same time here, he's also losing $800,000 per game. When do you come to a breaking point and say, all right, now I'm starting to lose my life savings here?
Look, Hassan Reddick is getting old. I mean, he's running out of opportunities to get paid. And you're absolutely, I understand your point. I would be more inclined to agree. I'm just saying the Jets kind of gave him the finger as soon as they traded for him, which it's like, what the hell? Why are you trading for a guy with contract issues with the previous team and then continuing those issues? Did you think that things are going to get better there? It's again, what Albert Einstein said. He's the star of the show today, Albert Einstein, even though he has nothing to do with sports. Doing the same thing and expecting different results. You did the same thing the Eagles are doing, and you expected that he would actually play for you when you haven't proven a damn thing competitively.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to touch on that real quick because I don't think we've really talked about enough the fact that Hassan Reddick is losing $800,000 per game. Anyways, we'll move on to our suck fest. I think we need to do a Fumblerooski suck fest of the week.
That'd be fun.
And this is, if we're going to tag it this, then this is the game right here, the Commanders versus the Giants in Washington. Whew. Taking the Commanders. This
Commanders
is
easy.
Yeah. This is, I just, even with Washington's terrible defense, I just don't know how Daniel Jones has any confidence after what happened last week.
He shouldn't have been paid to begin with. He probably shouldn't even be in the league. He should probably be a backup somewhere right now. That one season that he had in 2022, it really helped him as far as getting paid, but the Giants should never have been fooled by that. I mean, most of that was because they transformed their team into a run first offense. They ran the whole thing through Saquon Barkley, and Daniel Jones was just a game manager. Yet they chose Jones over Saquon, who is now actually playing very well over in Philadelphia right now. And yeah, I have the Commanders, and it's mainly because of their offense. I really like Jaden Daniels. I like what we saw out of him. I don't think he's fully developed yet, hence his lack of passing. But his running ability alone, as long as he is smart about how he runs, refer to Tua, refer to Anthony Richardson. As long as he's smart about how he does it, everyone saw some of his plays in college where he just took hits he didn't need to take. I think they can win some games just off of that. And I think this is going to be one of those where it's the Giants. You have a bad team. You may even see some flashes of passing ability just because the Giants are that bad. They made Sam Darnold look good last week. I think we're going to see that from Jaden Daniels.
I like it. Next game on the docket, Chargers Panthers, and we're talking about two teams on the vibe totem pole right now. The Chargers are up here. They're up here. Panthers are way down here and sinking. Goodness gracious. And Jim Harbaugh is the main reason for this as well. What was that?
Phone. I was pulling something up on ESPN, and we love ads that pop up on ESPN against my consent.
Nice. We love that. But he must be foaming at the mouth right now because he's got Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater as his tackles, and Joe Alt just had his way with Max Crosby last week. Max Crosby, I don't know the stats on it, but he really did not get into the backfield at all last week. So easily enough for me going Chargers.
Yeah, you have a Chargers team that has kind of finally, I'm not saying they're going to be in contention, even in playoff contention this year. But they're finally starting to come to their senses. They're protecting their star quarterback with Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater on your bookends. And you have better coaching. And you can clearly see an offensive line and good coaching is more important than having Keenan Allen and Mike Williams back there. And Austin Eckler as well. We're seeing that is more important. And you did bring in Ladd McConkey. He looked fine to start. So, you know, as long as you have your star quarterback on his feet with some good coaching, then he's going to make his targets significantly better than they are. So this is an encouraging sign for the Chargers. If you're a Chargers fan, I think this season is going to be very encouraging. It's what you would look at as more of a bridge year. But I think this is another win for the Chargers, and they start 2-0. I thought what we saw from the Panthers was an absolute... I mean, it was a dumpster fire.
Yeah. And this is the way that Jim Harbaugh is coaching this team right now. This is the ultimate Jim Harbaugh game plan. This is the ultimate Jim Harbaugh offense. Ground and pound, run through a motherfucker's face.
I guess look at the language is out the window today, but I kind of started.
I'm already thinking about how I'm saying it not for kids right now on YouTube. But
yeah.
Like Herbert last week, 144 yards in the air, and the rushing attack for the Chargers, 176 yards. J.K. Dobbins had 135 of those alone. This is the way Jim Harp, he dedicates himself so much to the run game that expect another big rushing attack this week. Honestly, if you want to put the over on 150 yards for team rushing yards, I don't blame you. Because that's probably what we're going to be looking at this week.
I'm still skeptical of this rushing attack. J.K. Dobbins is coming off an Achilles tear. And yes, you might be thinking after that performance, well, I think it's fine now. Look at James Robinson a couple of years ago. He had the same situation, coming off an Achilles tear. And then he comes back and he takes the lead in that backfield by storm. And everyone's like, holy crap, it's not ETN, it's James Robinson. But he started to peter out a little bit. There's nothing that I know about Achilles tears, about recovering from it, but there's just something that seems off about it, where you see a lot of running backs who recover from it. When they immediately come back, they have some of their best games, and then they're out of the league within a few weeks. Like James Robinson, who has heard from him since? After his first few games, he was awesome. And then he fell apart.
Yeah. So I think my point more is I don't think it really matters who's in the backfield for the Chargers. They're still just going to ground and pound because that's the type of game that they're willing to play. And they have kind of bought into that regardless of who's in the backfield.
Yeah. Listen, if J.K. Dobbins becomes one of the first running backs to remain in the league after an Achilles tear, then great. That's awesome to hear for modern day medicine. I'm just saying from what we have seen, we've seen a lot of running backs who've torn their Achilles, came back, put up great results at first, and then fell apart right after. So I don't know if there's something about the recovery of an Achilles tear where it's just that it seems fine at first, but it's just something to monitor.
Yeah. Moving on to the next game, Browns Jaguars. Oh man, I don't really know where to go with this game necessarily. Even with the game that Deshaun Watson and the Browns had last week, here's a stat that I'll throw out for you. According to PFF, out of the six sacks. Here's your week two trivia of the week. Out of the six sacks, how many sacks were charged to the offensive line?
You tell me.
No, just take a guess. Six sacks, one through six. Or zero through six, excuse me.
How much do I put on the offensive line?
Or how much does Pro Football Focus put on the offensive line for those six sacks?
I'll say three. Go in between.
Zero. All six sacks were deemed by Pro Football Focus as quarterback sacks. Sacks that are blamed on the quarterback. So that being said, I'm going with the Jags.
Interesting.
That's not necessarily my reason, but I kind of just talked myself into it.
Yeah. This is a weird game because both teams seem off. but I'm going with the Jaguars because you have the quarterback situation nailed down pretty well. I wanted this to be a talking point for the Tuesday episode, but there is something seriously wrong. We know there's something seriously wrong with Deshaun Watson already, but I'm talking about on the field.
Yeah.
There's something has gone wrong with him on the field where he actually legitimately cannot play. And we've only seen flashes last year. He's getting much more easily hurt. I mean, this guy, the fall off for this guy is insane. We know that he sat out a season. We know that he was he caught 25 plus cases off the top of my head. He was suspended for most of the season that he came back. And then when he came back, he got hurt. And then an old guy carried your team to an 11-6 record and a playoff berth. So it's something is wrong with this guy. Seriously, outside of I'm saying something is wrong to Deshaun Watson. We all know that part, but I'm talking about on the field, seriously. This guy is not the same player that he was in Houston. And if you're Cleveland, you just traded away Baker Mayfield, who's now lighting it up over there in Tampa. You traded for Deshaun Watson. You gave him a ton of money, all guaranteed. And now he's playing like this? Something's off. Something is seriously off.
If you're Russell Wilson and the Broncos, you are breathing a sigh of relief that you're not really the worst contract in football anymore. But
yeah. I mean, there's something wrong with the Jaguars too. Much less so, but
yeah.
Their offense, it must be coaching. It could be Trevor Lawrence isn't as good as we thought he would be. There's something wrong there too, but not as wrong, which is why I'm picking the Jaguars.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this on the Tuesday episode, and all the points that you made, Adam, were basically the same points that we made on Tuesday as well. And I think that Deshaun Watson is just so much in his own head at this point that, you have obviously all these cases of sexual assault that came out against him. Maybe that's still in the back of his mind. You also have the terrible game that he just had against Dallas. Right afterwards, he reveals that he's dealing with, I think it was a death of his dad. Don't quote me on that. I'm not looking at the article right now. But either way, death in the family. And then on top of that, another allegation gets put on him the day after the blowout loss to Dallas. So I think that he's going to be way too much in his head at this point. He's going to get hurt again. Because when you're too much in your own head, you're a danger to your own self. Enough of that negative bullshit. Raiders, Ravens. No disrespect to the Raiders and Antonio Pierce. This is going to be a get-right game for the Ravens. It probably shouldn't be, but Ravens with a very long week of rest to get themselves ready to go for the Raiders. Coming off a pretty poor loss to the Chargers, a game that should not have ended 21-10, and it really came down to coaching. Really came down to Antonio Pierce punting the ball from the Chargers 45. The first time that a team since the Rex Ryan Bills had punted on fourth and less than five from the opponents inside the opponent's 45 or 50. Either way, it was in opponent territory. First time since the Rex Ryan Bills. So obviously, my answer here is the Ravens.
Ravens easy. Yes, the Ravens lost their opening night against the Chiefs, but it was such a close game. And it was just a couple of inches, and you have a tie game, and potentially you win it in overtime.
It was by a toe.
Yeah, I don't even know if I would call this a get right game for the Ravens because they looked fine. I mean, overall, they looked like a competitive team. They have their issues. I thought Zay Flowers has left a lot to be desired, being their wide receiver one. He reminds me a little bit of Marquise Brown when he first started.
We got some news about Marquise Brown when we come around to the Chiefs as well, but we'll say that to him when we get to the Chiefs.
Oh, I know. They're just head and shoulders better than the Raiders. So I think they win this game and they show that they are still a playoff team that will most likely win 10 plus games this year.
Yeah. That'll do it for the 1 o'clock early afternoon slot. When we come back, breaking news on the Chiefs end. We'll get to that when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting, Chris Kostich, Adam Wright. As we head into our next spot, the late afternoon games, and we're just going to get right into it. Hollywood Brown placed on IR. Literally just got done about 20 minutes ago, and they're trying to get him to practice this entire week, but it just wasn't working out for him. So, and kind of just segues into the Chiefs versus Bengals game, which... so many injury storylines with that as well. Just a lot of storylines to begin with. More on really the Bengals side than the Chiefs side. This is really the only storyline to really be had. But if you're a Hollywood Brown fantasy owner like myself, you're kind of hoping that with the news that was coming out, you would hope that he would be good to go for week 2, especially with the way that Andy Reid was kind of talking about it. But fortunately, placed on IR, going to get shoulder surgery, going to be out for the next month at the very least. So we probably won't see him till about week 8 for all we know. Week 10, maybe.
Yeah. So,
It's not like it's a huge loss for the Chiefs offense either, especially the way that they wasn't the prettiest game on against the Ravens, but
yeah,
they still look pretty good.
They looked fine. I think the biggest takeaway was not Xavier Worthy, who people keep bringing up, but it was Rashee Rice. I don't know why people are talking more about Xavier Worthy than Rashee Rice. I don't. I get that he looked exciting in the couple of plays that there were only a few big plays that he made. One of them was a designed play, and the other was blown coverage. And then another one was a first down for about 15 yards. So, yeah, I mean, it looked exciting, but I don't think he proved anything that he was their wide receiver 1 yet. I don't think not yet. He could be,
no.
But I saw more out of Rashee Rice than I did out of Worthy. And if they don't both pan out, then good for them. That clearly means that the Chiefs are the overwhelming favorite to win the Super Bowl this year. But I still need to see more from Worthy to be convinced that this guy is not a bust.
Yeah. I think that the biggest thing, though, really, the biggest excitement part about Xavier Worthy is that he got 2 touchdowns off of 3 touches. That's really the biggest thing. You know,
yeah.
And we already knew that he was due for a lot of big play material. It just depends on how they end up using him, right? And it's the same thing for, what's his name? Tavon Austin. Big play material, didn't get used right.
Yeah, but if you need to be used right in order to work out in the NFL, then it sounds like you shouldn't be in the NFL. Now, I think Xavier Worthy could be a solid player. In fact, he could be a 1. I'm not ruling that out yet. I'm just saying if you need to work out a designed play in order to get you open, to utilize your speed, if you can't get open by yourself, then that's a bit of a red flag. And again, this is his first week. We're going to see a lot more. The other play was blown coverage. So yeah, maybe he can play. I'm just saying he hasn't proven it entirely yet. It's too small a sample size. I saw more out of Rashee Rice.
I was more saying on the Tavon Austin side that the coaches weren't doing a whole lot to try to get him open. That was more the point I was making there.
Yeah.
But anyways, to the actual game. Chiefs versus Bengals. Bengals are looking terrible right now.
Such a hot mess.
Yeah, they're a hot mess. And it goes from the Ja'Marr Chase drama to now you have all these clips of Joe Burrow still working on that wrist. I said this earlier this week. I don't know if Joe Burrow is really going to have – I don't think he's going to play too much farther into his 30s. Obviously, he's not in his 30s right now, but I don't think he's going to play too deep into his 30s.
We're seeing – I hope we're not seeing Andrew Luck part two. That's what I will say. Because I also think – I think what from what we saw from Joe Burrow, he looked better than Andrew Luck. And – I mean, this is a guy who is who's so far proven to be the only active quarterback in the league to be able to beat Patrick Mahomes. He's beaten him. He's beaten him once before in the playoffs. He's been the only guy to beat him who's active so far. And it was kind of fun.
Allen has beaten him, but and Lamar, but not in the playoffs.
Not in the playoffs, I'm talking about. Come on, man. The Raiders have beaten the Chiefs before. And the regular season Chiefs are so much different than postseason Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes is an assassin. But Joe Burrow is – it was kind of fun watching this rivalry between the Bengals and the Chiefs. The Bengals, they love to talk. They called Arrowhead Burrowhead. And every single time they faced each other with Burrow healthy, they either beat him or made it a very good game.
Yeah.
And again, like – the Chiefs won in 2022 fair and square. But seeing the Bengals, how they got screwed over by that one game, the DeMar Hamlin game, where they were not granted the neutral grounds privileges when they were part of the game, and then they went in to Buffalo and then they beat the Bills, and then Joe Burrow's post on Instagram, uninvited guests, old. And despite missing three of your five offensive linemen, your quarterback was sacked five times. The Chiefs, they still nearly beat them. It was a very close game. I'm going to miss this rivalry I'm going to miss this rivalry if the Bengals taper off like this, because it just seems like a sad ending. That being said, I'm rambling too much. Give me the Chiefs. It's not a hard pick. Even if the Bengals figure it out, there's something seriously wrong with this team. They're refusing to pay their star players. The one guy who they did pay, they're not taking care of him well. I don't know what it is, because they're trying on the offensive line. It has to be coaching. I don't know what's going on here.
I think that the other thing too, so I'm going to touch on one more thing about Joe Burrow. I'm also taking the Chiefs, by the way. I'm going to touch on one more thing about Joe Burrow and this whole thing with the wrists. And from what I've seen this one doctor, I saw this guy on TikTok. He does a lot of reports on certain NFL injuries, and he did one about Joe Burrow's, and this was a couple months ago. And basically, all in all, he was saying that it's kind of hard to say what his career is going to look like the rest of the way, because this is a very rare injury that Joe Burrow has. But what he can definitively say is that he's never going to recover 100% from this injury, which is very unfortunate to hear. Anyways, I think that if we see the Bengals lose this game, it's not the end of the world. We've seen this the last couple of years. Last year, obviously, throw that out the window. But in the 2 years that Joe Burrow was fully healthy, 100% healthy for two straight seasons, they started out really shit and then ended up climbing the ladder, getting themselves back into contention. So I don't think that them going 0-2 is going to be the end of the world. But
they may still be a playoff team, but the problem is it's the same trend. They get some of their players get hurt. Joe Burrow, most notably, their offensive line always sucks. It's just, they need to prove that they can figure these things out. And I don't think they will anymore. They have too many players that they refuse to pay. They've kicked the can so far down the road that it's the last second. You have to pay all these players, and you still need, if Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are gone, you have no targets for Joe Burrow in an offensive line where you've needed those targets, because he doesn't have time to throw.
Yeah.
This Bengals team is doing everything that they can possibly do wrong.
Yeah. All right, enough about that game. We've spent way too much time on Chiefs-Bengals.
Way too much.
Steelers-Broncos. Broncos coming off of a loss to the Seahawks. Steelers coming off of a very tight win against the Falcons from last week. On the Steelers side, kind of it seems that Justin Fields is still going to start this week. They're kind of taking the Russell Wilson thing day by day. Limited participant in yesterday's practice. And seeing that the Steelers defense is still extremely good, I'm going to go with the Steelers on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Steelers.
Because you like
Kirk
last
Cousins
week,
doesn't look,
didn't have to do a whole lot. Like
it's, I don't, it doesn't even have anything to do with the Steelers offense and everything to do with Kirk Cousins against the Steelers defense.
Yeah.
And Kirk Cousins just doesn't look, he with an offensive line that's really good for the Falcons and the targets that that Falcons team has, Kirk didn't look right. And he is 35 and coming off an Achilles tear. If he doesn't look the same, then something tells me that he may never be the same.
I was saying this on Tuesday. I think that he might have come back too early.
Yeah. I mean, this Falcons team is lucky that they took Michael Penix number one overall. As dumb a decision as it was, if they have to move on from Kirk Cousins, they have a young quarterback to go to.
All right. Let's save it for when we get to the Monday night game. Rams Cardinals. Cardinals have the spread by one. Minus one is the spread because they're at home and they played the Bills extremely tough, almost took him to OT. Biggest takeaway, Kyler Murray needs to look downfield. He needs to look downfield and find Marvin Harrison. Granted, the entire first half, he wasn't going to get him the ball because the Bills were just letting the Cardinals run on them all day. I could potentially see this being a similar situation as well, but it also depends on if the Rams actually put the right defensive personnel on the field because for some reason, the Bills defense, I don't know what Sean McDermott was doing over there, but he was setting up for five wide receiver sets when the Cardinals are setting up with two tight ends, two running backs, and just running it down their throat. I think the Rams are going to be a little bit more prepared for that. And I'm going to go with the Rams. Even with Puka out, I think that the Rams receivers, all of them are going to step up. Cooper Kupp, DeMarcus Robinson, et cetera, et cetera. I could see Cooper Kupp getting another 10-plus reception game again.
Give me the Rams. It's not really too hard. No. The Cardinals looked competitive, but the fact that their offensive coordinator came out and said, I don't know how we're going to get Marvin Harrison Jr., their number four overall pick, one of the better wide receiver prospects in recent memory. The fact that you are struggling to get him involved in this offense does not bode well for the future of the Cardinals on this offense, at least on this season. They're going... Somebody has to be fired if this continues.
I think they'll end up figuring it out. I think just week one was a weird week where they ended up having to go so.
Do you think it's going to be that quick though? If they had this much trouble and they're saying that it's going to be a process, do you think it's going to be this week where it's just night and day?
I don't think it's going to be this week. I think that they'll try to find Marvin Harrison a lot more than they did last week based off of the reasons I just gave. That the Rams aren't going to act like they have their dick in their hand.
You have Matthew on the Rams side. You have Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp. They've been there before. You have Kyron Williams. You have Sean McVay, who's a very good offensive mind. I think this Rams team is going to roll over the Cardinals. The Cardinals will be able to score a little bit, but how much can you score when Kyler Murray is working with guys who aren't named Marvin Harrison Jr. on this team?
Yeah. Yeah. That'll segue us to our Fumbleroski game of the week, Sunday Night Football. Back-to-back weeks where it's been Sunday Night Football because that's just how the schedule makers made it. Bears versus Texans. second-year QB C.J. Stroud going up against, or the number two overall pick from 2023, going up against the number one overall pick from this year, 2024, C.J. Stroud versus Caleb Williams. And the Bears are going to be looking for a better game out of Caleb Williams. They are 1-0. This could turn into a defensive slugfest. This could. But I'm going to go with the Texans. I think that Caleb Williams probably won't have another great game. I think it's still going to take him a couple weeks, maybe another week. But seeing the way they played against the Titans defense, and it really came down to the fact that the Bears defense also took over in that game and was the sole reason that they won. I don't think that they're going to have as easy of a time this week with C.J. Stroud as they did with Will Levis.
I never thought this Bears team would be a contender this year. I thought they would be competitive. But I also think that Caleb Williams was further along in his development in his rookie year than he has shown. 14 for 25 for 29. You attempted 29 passes, and you only managed 93 yards on 14 completions. When you have Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, decent offensive line, a good running game, you managed just 93 yards off that. I fear that we may not see Caleb Williams at his best, if he can play, if he isn't a bust, until year two or three of his career. And it sucks because I thought that this guy was big league ready, but I might have been wrong there. And with that being said, the guy who was big league ready his first year, C.J. Stroud, he's in year two, and he's working with Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs. Give me the Texans on this one. And the Texans look pretty good in week one. I think they're going to look good again in week two against the Bears defense that is sneaky good. So maybe it'll be close. But I think the Texans score enough points that it's a comfortable margin. And Texans start 2-0.
I like it. Texans. Monday Night Football, the Falcons versus the Eagles. The final game on our week two docket. And Eagles coming off of a shootout victory against the Packers in Brazil. Still stupid as shit that they were even in Brazil to begin with. And they're going up against the Falcons. And we kind of touched on this right before I cut you off, Adam, because we still had this game when we were talking about Kirk Cousins. And I wanted you to wait till we were talking about the Falcons and the Eagles to talk about it instead of when we were talking about the Broncos and the Steelers.
What are you going to do?
Whatever. But either way, kind of to continue off of the Kirk Cousins thing, though, I feel like that I said this on Tuesday. I just think that he might be coming back a little too soon. You know, I made the comparison between, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins and both Achilles tears, right? Aaron Rodgers tears his Achilles week one. And it's up for debate on if he was ready to go or not by the time the Jets were in playoff contention or still kind of reeling for a playoff spot, whereas Kirk Cousins doesn't tear his Achilles till about week five. So in theory, and I also compared other Achilles injuries to NBA players like Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson. They took a full 365 plus to get healthy, whereas Kirk Cousins is kind of going in this maybe a month or so too soon. And you can kind of see it with the way that he's throwing the ball. He's really not putting a lot on that back foot, which is the foot that he ends up tearing the Achilles on. He's not putting a lot on these throws. And that's the main concern. I have the Eagles,
and I'm not sure. I hope you're right on this matter. I hope Kirk Cousins doesn't end his career early. I hope this Achilles tear didn't ruin his play. I hope he can still play.
I also have one more point as well. And I feel like that another point you could say is that maybe Kirk fit about 50% of the plays that were run by the Falcons last week were out of the pistol. I don't know if running out of the pistol is really the forte for Kirk Cousins.
I mean, either way,
it's a completely different foot alignment. You're going even set, whereas in the past, Kirk is always on the offset foot, which is most quarterbacks when they're in the regular shotgun. And shit, even Kirk Cousins said he doesn't really like playing out of the gun. He'd rather be under center. So maybe.
Sure.
Anyways, sorry, I just wanted to throw that out there.
It's fine. I mean, look, I think you and I can both agree he doesn't look like himself. All I'm saying is I hope it's not permanent. I hope that it's not age has caught up with him to the point where if he gets injured, he doesn't come back the same. And Achilles tears are, I mean, those are devastating. I genuinely thought at first that Aaron Rodgers' career was straight up over. A 39-year-old quarterback tearing his Achilles. Kirk Cousins is 35, but 35 is still reasonably old. He plays quarterback, so he has that much going for him. Not that much you need to do besides get the footwork down, be able to step into your throws. I still think he doesn't look right.
Yeah.
So as of right now, it's Eagles. Even if Cousins was right, to be honest, I think this Eagles team has a lot to prove, and they showed it on opening night. They looked really good. And they surpass my expectations.
Yeah.
So give me the Eagles.
Yeah, and I wish CJ was here because I would love to know what the Philly radio is talking. Or we could actually just hit up our guys over at Squawking Eagles to see what's going on over in Philly, because obviously they wanted Nick Sirianni's head on a stick, and great win against the Packers, and now you're setting yourself up for a really big game against the Falcons. We knew that if the Eagles go 1-3 or 0-4 in the first month of the season, Nick Sirianni might get the can. But honestly, the way that it's tracking up, that's probably an afterthought at this point. But who knows? But any final thoughts after we end this long Week 2 preview?
Not really. I mean, Week 1 was a bit of a shit show, you know.
Yeah.
It's I went 8-8 on my picks, and I was expecting, there were so many games that I was expecting to go a different direction. It just shows the unpredictability of the NFL. You expect players and teams to go one way and it goes in the opposite direction. So,
and, you know, as we would have thought, a lot of storylines for Week 2, which is why this is trailing to be an hour 13 episode. But that'll do it for us today. Thank you for listening to us. New episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard and Fridays at 5. Obviously, a new episode going to be coming out on Tuesday to recap the Monday night game. If worthy enough, it probably will be worthy enough, and a couple other of the Week 2 games that are going to show some storylines. But be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. And be sure to follow our Instagram, FumbleRooski_podcast, and our TikTok, FumbleRooskiPod, to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, from Chris Gostich, Adam Wright, and our other co-hosts who aren't here right now, CJ Medeiros and Justin Tucker, we say so long, and we'll see you on Tuesday.